Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold. Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with Audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcast FREE.
Yay, podcast night!
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
Major Spoilers theme song!
The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air. On the air. The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air. On the air. Podcast.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven. If you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast,
The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
In this issue, the clock strikes one and Superman's done and Dr. Manhattan's blue skin. A full slate of reviews, including What's Up with Frank and Joe, Misses from the Secret Empire Underground, and more, plus general topics, private matters, kernels of truth, and there are no jokes about lieutenants. But that's okay, because the Major Spoilers podcast is officially on the air. Major Spoilers.
Welcome to issue 729 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out again this week. I promise you, instead of lieutenants, we will only say lieutenants.
Correct.
Why is it lieutenant? Do you know? Does anyone know the difference?
Help us out here, Canada.
I have no idea because it's from the French lieutenant.
Okay.
I'm sure the British just did it to be contrary, and we just did it to not be America.
Okay. All right. I've always wondered. There's got to be a reason.
I believe it's for the same reason that they stick U's in all the flavors and the colors.
Because of the French spelling, because they're derivatives and that's how they're spelled.
Exactly. Stop being derivative. Honestly, if I'm not mistaken, even when they're saying lieutenant, it's spelled the same way as we spell lieutenant, which I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think what this is that thing where America and Britain are two countries separated by the Atlantic Ocean. And that's true. And so, I don't know.
But America has pretty close French allies, if Hamilton is to be believed, per the Revolutionary War.
Well, there is a Lafayette Boulevard right downtown. So.
I do know that there are a lot of people in the military from various military organizations from around the world. I bet you could write to us at podcast@majorspoilers.com and let us know why it is that difference. In the meantime, while we await your email, let us do some news. This week, it looks like the doomsday clock has started, and this isn't a political discussion. Scott Free returns.
Damn it.
And the American Gods get a second season. Let's spin that wheel of destiny. Let's see where it lands. And it's going to stop on the doomsday clock. No, not the doomsday clock that is counting down to our imminent doom. That thing was started about 3 months ago. But we are talking about the doomsday clock that's coming in, what, August? Oh, I'm sorry, November? And this is where we finally find out if the Watchmen universe and the DC universe finally collide into one another. This is a one-shot event written by Jeff Johns with art by Gary Frank and Brad Anderson. And it's been a year since Rebirth has started. And now we need to know who is that mysterious blue finger pointing out of the whirlwind clouds. What's going on with Mars? Who's Dr. Oz? What's going on with Wally West? I mean, that other Mr. Wally West.
Dr. Oz has his own TV show.
Yeah, yeah, that guy too. What's going on with him? According to Jeff Johns, it's time. Last year, the DC Universe confronted the legacy of Watchmen and Rebirth the way Watchmen confronted the legacy of superhero comics 3 decades ago. Thematically and metaphorically, there are no better choice than to use Dr. Manhattan. If you're going to have a conflict between optimism and pessimism, a battle between the very forces of hope and despair, you need to have someone who personifies the cynicism that leaked into our hearts and also has the ability to affect the entire DCU. It's all paying off this November with Doomsday Clock. It sounds kind of silly. I mean, not silly as just in the way that it comes out in that statement. So we're going to have Dr. Manhattan and Superman face one another.
Somebody had tweeted today, and I think this has to happen, that Superman has to realize that he has to meet him on equal footing, so he strips naked to fight him. And then you
I
just
would
have,
read the hell out of that.
Right? 20 pages of naked John Osterman and naked Kal-El of Krypton just kind of punching each other, and there's junk everywhere. And it will be called Doomsday Junk.
What's your reaction to this, Rodrigo?
My reaction continues to be Watchmen was a pretty good standalone series. Mm-hmm. Why do any of this? And of course, the answer is because it was a very successful standalone series, and why not milk it? Mm-hmm. Also, rights issues. But mm-hmm. it does come down to that for me a lot of the time. I'm really not interested in any crossover. I wasn't interested in the Before Watchmen stuff because, you know, it was pretty tight. All I really know is that from all the buildup, it's like it can't not be Dr. Manhattan at this point, right?
Right, right, right.
If it turns out to be Dr. Manhattan, then everybody's going to be like, oh, yeah, we knew that. You've been hinting at that. And if it turns out not to be, then everybody's going to be like, well, what the heck was I reading it for?
Yeah, it's going to turn out to be Hawk.
I mean, you know,
it's not going to be Hawk.
Are you sure? Because it could be.
It's Captain Atom.
Oh, is it? All right. They're finally correcting. They're correcting it. Wait a minute. It is Captain Atom. So, Matthew, explain that that joke for those people who don't know what you and I are talking about.
1991 summer crossover, Armageddon 2001, was basically a crossover that jumped through all of DC's annuals. And the basic premise was 10 years in the future, one of the major DC heroes was going to turn out to be this all-powerful despot jerkwad named Monarch. And throughout the series, it was made very clear three things. One, Monarch was incredibly powerful. Two, Monarch was evil and definitely seemed to fit a power pattern that would indicate that he was, in fact, Nathaniel Atom, Captain Atom. And three, it could not be Hank Hall the Hawk. But DC editorial found that the audience either somehow got leaked or figured out their things and changed their mind in midships and made it so that Monarch was actually Hawk all along, even though he was one of the people explicitly during the story shown to not be able to be Monarch. There's a later arc of Extreme Justice, which is terrible. Don't read Extreme Justice unless you're bored. That explains that, no, actually, that was a double feint by the real Monarch, who is in fact the future Captain Atom. But by that point, not only did nobody care, nobody actually was reading Extreme Justice, which is sad because they had a really good version of the Wonder Twins.
And of course, when we're talking about Captain Atom and Dr. Manhattan, that goes back to Charlton Comics.
Correct. Dr. Manhattan is reputedly based at least a little bit on Captain Atom from the point when Alan Moore's Watchmen treatment was in fact being created as a treatment to revitalize the Charlton characters who had just been purchased by DC after the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
See, sometimes it's fun to explain a joke to people. Desdemona Gunn says on Twitter today, reached out to me and says, to me, Watchmen was a statement about the comics industry, a self-contained infection of where comics were headed and what they were saying. Putting Watchmen into the DCU defeats the point of Watchmen, in my honest opinion. It's hard to criticize or look at Batman Superman with them just standing right there. I mean, their evolution, what they were, what they've turned into. Watchmen looked at the whole industry. Why integrate it? Anyone want to tackle that?
Well,
why? Why, Matthew? Why integrate it?
As the great philosopher Shane McMahon was once heard to say, cha-ching, cha-ching, it's all about the money.
Is it all about the money, Ashley?
Yeah. Or because Geoff Johns presumably wanted to write this and he's the boss guy. I mean, I don't like Watchmen. As I think I said here before, I appreciate it. I respect it. I understand its importance. And I appreciate what it's done for the industry, but I don't like it. I don't need to see these characters again. And, I don't care about this event. I'm really sorry.
You know, when we talk about making money, I mean, I don't know what the current, trade paperback is going for, probably 1995, 2495, something like that.
Oh, the Watchmen one?
Yeah.
That's got to be at least a $24.99. That's a big book.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And the interesting thing is, at one point, before the Watchmen movie was announced, it was selling easily a million copies of that in trade paperback form a year. Okay?
Yeah.
After the Watchmen movie was announced, it bumped up to 3 million copies a year. And I don't know what it's done afterwards, but it seems like we've got a pretty good cash cow going, and I can understand the mentality or the philosophy or the thought pattern that says, well, if people like Watchmen that much, we must create more Watchmen. So let us create the prequels to the Watchmen. Let us try to now integrate them into the DC universe. But I wonder if that ends up hurting those sales because people read the pre-Watchmen or people are reading what's coming up in Rebirth and the Doomsday Clock. And they're like, yeah, I have really no interest in going and checking out the Watchmen. So those overall
trades
slip.
It just dilutes your brand more than the selling. Like Watchmen, the original trade, has never gone out of print for a reason. I don't think you can do anything to it that's going to destroy the integrity of that.
And the original creator, who remains nameless because he doesn't want to be part of any of this, has actually gone on record, and whether this is true or not, I cannot say, but he has said that he believes part of the reason it stayed in print was he was told that he and his co-creator would actually have the rights revert if and when it went out of print.
Right.
That's not an uncommon deal across a variety of publishing companies, and that is the reason why some stuff stays in, whether it's true in this case or not. Like, that's not something that's unheard of.
Right.
And of course, DC at one point was more than happy to give more, you know, everything that he was due, and would send him checks, and he would either scratch them up or tear them up or probably other things with them, and basically says, I don't want your money. Quit sending me these checks.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if you guys read all of Before Watchmen.
I did not. You did.
I read none of it.
Here's the thing about Before Watchmen. Do you guys remember, Laurie Jasbasic's mother, Sally Jupiter?
Yes.
The only female, I guess not the only female, the primary female member of the Minutemen that we see. She's an old lady in the series. Before Watchmen actually has in it a subplot that explains that at one point, you may remember Sally had her costume that basically was lingerie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But she only wore one long evening glove, and it looked really neat. There's actually a plot point in Before Watchmen that explains why Sally wore one glove. There was apparently an incident where she was burned by acid and wore the one glove to cover the scars and the fabada fibbity foo. So,
that's it? I don't really care about that.
Well, that's the thing. It's another example of questions that should have never been asked. So I think that there is a chance that Doomsday Clock could be really good. I would like to say, and I want to say this with delicacy and tact, but probably can't because I'm me, that to my ear, talking about thematic cynicism and pessimism in comic books and linking it back to Watchmen is something that would probably be best done by a writer who doesn't regularly use people getting secretly impaled and murdered as a recurring theme in his work. The Geoff Johns has, I mean, there's a bloodlust in his books that I kind of look at and go, if you're calling this story the epitome of pessimism and cynicism, I want you to come back and explain to me. Let's just talk Final Crisis for a minute. But again, that's a thing.
Well, I wonder, but because on the other hand, and I'm not going to, you know, totally up and say Geoff Johns can do no wrong, but, you know, he does have this love affair with Silver Age, and he does try to bring back some hope and optimism in this. And if we look and see what's happened with the Superman, what was the name of the arc, Matthew, where they basically rewrote all of Superman's history and brought back in the Superman Reborn arc. Basically, everything that's ever happened to Superman has happened in the comic books. And so even though Rebirth has happened and we've had a universe reboot, all those other things have happened. My guess is when the Doomsday Clock is over, Superman just basically holds a mirror up to Dr. Manhattan.
Nature.
Yeah. And says, here you go, man. Do you want to be this guy or do you want to make things a little brighter and happier? And maybe Superman will sing a song. I mean, it's not uncommon.
The world a whole lot brighter.
Yeah, exactly. And so what will happen then is that Superman Reborn effect will ripple through all of the characters in the DC universe. And maybe, just maybe, we'll have some brighter, happier stories as a result. Not always, but in general.
Can I just say that?
Is that me being too optimistic about the comic book industry?
Oddly, yes. And I want everybody to write this down because Matthew just said to Steven, you're being too optimistic. And that makes it officially opposite day. But more importantly, think about this. He brought back the Silver Age and brought back the iconic brush cut Barry Allen of the Silver Age and immediately killed both of his parents and used that to rewrite the whole universe into a place of murderous dark evil. So I'm not saying that, you know, you're wrong.
Maybe they learned their lesson. Yeah.
No.
Am I being too optimistic? No. Am I being too optimistic, Rodrigo?
Comics learned a lesson.
No, I don't think you're being too optimistic, but it would be like it would be nice. It would be nice if Superman and Dr. Manhattan could have a conversation, and that conversation was sort of at least subtextually about the state of comics, and if it could be a self-aware conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like that's going to happen because there's this idea, like the central idea of this thing right now is that the current DC universe was possibly the creation of Dr. Manhattan, right? At the end of Watchmen, he's like, I'm going to go, and maybe he created it, right?
Right, right.
There's that idea going around. So how amazing would it be for Superman to talk to Dr. Manhattan and be like, hey, man, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Why do you keep like giving us this stuff and wiping us out and making us suffer and then wiping it out and then like trying to like connect things that don't go together? Why are you doing this to us? And for him to basically be like, well, because I'm bored, or well, because I thought that would be interesting. I thought, hey, I thought all of these weird storylines is what you wanted. What do you actually want from me? You know, and have that conversation where basically one side is comic book readers that are maybe like not necessarily happy with the state of comics. And the other side is sort of like a creator trying to work out what it is that he or she was trying to do.
Yeah.
A level of self-awareness that I don't think we're going to get out of this.
It would be awesome. A great philosophical discussion that also has hints of religion behind it. I mean, what happens when you meet God and you say, why are you doing this? And God says, because it could be so awesome, but we have to wait until November to find out. My guess, Ashley, is San Diego Comic-Con, which is coming up in a few months, will be loaded with Doomsday Clock stuff.
Yeah, and probably New York as well, which will be about a month before this launches.
And are you going to both of those? Do you know? Are you going to New York and San Diego?
I sure am. So people can look for announcements. I got like a, not a bunch, but I got like some super secret stuff going on.
Ooh.
So hopefully I'll be able to talk about it.
Will we find out more about, will we find out more about what's going on with Jupiter Jet?
That's a question I could probably answer for you in about a month.
Okay.
I have to finish it first.
Okay.
We just started issue 5, so it's going to take about a month to get drawn.
Excellent.
And I'll tell you, I'll give you the exclusive, guys. I'll be that generous.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Listeners, you can head over to majorspoilers.com. You can check out this story about the Doomsday Clock. And then I would also point you to this week's comics portal, Integrating the Watchmen into the DCU, written by Wayne Hall, where he has his thoughts on whether this is going to work or whether it's not going to work or if anyone's going to learn their lesson. It's all over at majorspoilers.com. And if you enjoy these discussions, this week's a general topic discussion, and we've got some interesting ones coming up here in a little bit. If you enjoy our conversations, if you like learning a little bit about comic history, if you enjoy laughing and crying and feeling uncomfortable at times, then head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. That's where you can sign up and you can support this show with a small monthly contribution. And a little bit goes a long way, especially when there are a lot of you who sign up. We can do a lot more things and keep everything going on schedule. If we can get some more people to sign up at patreon.com/majorspoilers, never miss an episode and get some cool things in return. It's all over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Let us now jump into some reviews.
Reviews.
Oh, before we get into some reviews, I want to tell you something really cool. This is off topic. But okay. I got this new device in today. It's from Elgato, the people that make the game capture devices that everyone used to stream their video games.
Isn't that like Spanish for the cat?
I don't know.
Okay.
But they have this new product that just came out called Stream Deck, and it's basically a mini switcher, which is really, really cool. And it integrates really well with OBS, which is one of the applications we've used in the past to stream Finally Friday. And so instead of having to use keyboards and mouse and everything to click it, all I now have to do is tap a single button and it does all the switching and everything for me. It's really cool. Nice. And I was doing something before the show on how we could set this up if we were doing Major Spoilers as a weekly live stream where people could see our pretty faces and what would happen when we got into the review section. And all I have to do is push a button and instantly Ashley's face would pop up and it would have preview pages for the comic that she's reviewing and information about the writers and everything. And it's so easy to set up as a template because each week, all I would have to do is dump in the real easy text information about the title of the book that she's reviewing this week. It's Quince number 5, the writers and the artist. And then I've got the preview pages. I just dump them into the folder and the system automatically updates everything.
I would have to put my information in the show notes more than 5 minutes before the show started.
Well, yes, that would be helpful. But that live stream is coming closer and closer and closer as more people sign up at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Now let us get into some reviews. Ashley, please tell us about Quince number 5. Now this says English version. What's that all about?
Oh yeah. So I think it's actually called Quince, but my knowledge of Spanish is limited at best, because if you come from where I come from, people of Latin origins are magical creatures that exist only on television until you move to America. So the good people over at Fanbase Press have been putting out this really interesting series that I think is called Quince, because it's about her quinceañera, which they repeatedly make the joke in the first issue is Spanish bar mitzvah or Mexican bar mitzvah. And I think that if you have that base knowledge going into it, you'll be fine. So the lead character is this 15-year-old girl named Lupita, and she learns on her 15th birthday at her awesome 15th birthday party that she has magical powers. And her grandma also has magical powers and knew all about it. So over the past few issues, Abuela has been teaching Lupita what she could do and how far she can stretch her powers, and posing a lot of typical origin story questions to her about, you know, do you want to be a superhero? Then I'll make you a costume, but you have to train and you have to do good. You can't be a lazy superhero. And the great thing about the issue that is out this week, issue number 5, is that she finally gets to do something super. Now, if you're listening at home, 5 issues might sound like a long time to wait for a superhero to be super. However, they're only 11 pages long. They're styled in the same way that like DC Digital series, which is the first series, like Bombshells and Avengers of Supergirl are. So they are shorter. So it's really, it's like 2.5 issues. It's not that long. Lupe goes to school. She goes back to school for the semester and she gets a chance to save one of the hot boys in her class, whose name is Hot Devin, as opposed to other Hot Devin, which is how all the boys are classified. And it's been her daydream for a couple issues now to save a busload of hot boys from going over the side of a bridge and into a river. And she gets to save Hot Devin from falling off the school roof to his death and becoming presumably a Hot Devin pancake. And the other really cool thing about Kinsei as a series is, like Steven mentioned, I'm reading the English language versions because Spanish is beyond my capabilities. You can also, on Comixology, which is where this is, you can get a Spanish language version, which I think is so amazing. And when this is inevitably sold as a cartoon, they'll probably be able to do some cool, you know, like updated Dora the Explorer level educational quality with it as well. It's created by, everybody here is an impossible last name, so I'm sorry to the entire creative team. It's created by Sebastian Kadlicek. I know him and I feel really bad. I can't say your last name. I'm sorry, Sebastian. And written by Kit Steinkellner and drawn by her sister, Emma Steinkellner. I don't know them, but I also apologize for saying your last name wrong. I think Kit writes really, really funny dialogue. She's a playwright and a screenwriter, so I think you could definitely see that shining through here. Emma has a really cute, unique style. It's kind of like a pared-down, cartoonized version of what's going on in the America comic over at Marvel Comics right now. And I mean, it's an obvious comparison to make between, you know, two Latina heroines, but the design of the characters and the styles are very similar. My only criticism of the series is that there's almost no backgrounds. It's usually just one color for the entire scene. I understand that when you're producing your own comics, that could be an expensive, time, you know, intensive undertaking. But I'd like a door or a couple buildings. We only really get a background during an important moment, like when Lupe's fighting for the first time, flying for the first time. When she saves Hot Devin from almost dying. And I wish that the art was a little more fleshed out, and maybe that's something that's coming in future issues. I don't know how long they've been working on it versus, you know, it's not its date to air, its date to publisher right now. But overall, I think it's an adorable idea. I think it is very well executed. And I think that if you are, you know, probably a female reader, although I don't want to put anyone in a gender box, and you like things like America or the Hawkeye series, Lumberjanes, then this is definitely going to be for you. Support independent comics. They're really cool, and they need your support more than anything else. So go pick up Kinsei from Fanbase Press in English or Spanish or both, because maybe you're that cool. And I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 because I think it excels at everything that it is trying to do.
Very cool. Thank you for that. Ashley Rodrigo, what have you got for us? It looks like video game related.
Video game comic number one.
You know, we've talked about this before, but man, that has become Dark Horse's new go-to genre. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dark Horse has, you know, proven itself pretty well to be able to kind of do a property, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got that Star Wars taken away, but it doesn't take away the experience Buffy. Of it. Yeah, they got that Buffy. They got some other stuff going on, and now they have Mass Effect. I actually think they do all the BioWare stuff. They might do Dragon Age 2. I don't remember.
And they just announced today. Side note: they just announced today something that you will be interested in. The Overwatch hardback collection. The first one is The Art of Overwatch. Second one is a hardback collection of the 12-issue comic book series.
Well, I definitely want the art one.
Yeah, I think that's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. So Mass Effect Discovery. Jeremy Barlow, writer, artist is Gabriel Guzman. Or Gabriel Guzman. I don't know how he likes to pronounce it. Is a story that ties into Mass Effect Andromeda, which is that video game that I talked about a while back, with all the controversies. of not being very good looks wise. This comic, it is very good looks wise. The art is actually really good. Mass Effect has a very particular look, both for its aliens and its technology. And this comic nails it. Everything's on model. Everything looks really solid. While still kind of doing its own thing, right? Because it's obviously all the Mass Effect stuff has that CG look. But this is takes enough liberties with the style to kind of make it its own thing, which is nice. The story is okay. Really, most of the kicks that you get out of this is if you've played Andromeda, you know who the main character is.
It's Andromeda, right?
It's Titus Andromedon,
right?
I would. He'll
make
that.
You eat your parents.
Yep. No, but the main character is a side character in the game. So it's interesting. I'm guessing this is going to be how he ended up, and already this comic kind of upends his place in things already, because he's entering the Andromeda Initiative basically as a spy. So figuring out how this character actually ends up where he ends up at the beginning of the game is pretty interesting. That said, unless you were actually like paying really close attention to Andromeda, you might actually have missed it. Like, you might not remember who this character was because they're not huge. And you always have the option to kind of not follow up on characters. Like, every character gives you 15,000 missions. And if you don't follow their missions, like their storyline, you might not remember it. Also, there's 1,000 characters. So I actually had to go back and say, is this guy, or is this guy this other guy? Because, unfortunately, aliens in Mass Effect of a particular species tend to look very, very similar to each other. Turians don't have a lot of different things that can be different from each other. Salarians don't have a lot of different things that can be different from each other. You know, their coloring's different. They'll have different markings on their face and stuff, but they kind of have they're kind of rubber mask aliens, which seems like a weird thing for a video game, but it is kind of like that Star Trek, like this kind of looks like a person in a costume kind of look.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. Altogether, I'll give it 3 slices of meatloaf. Again, if you enjoyed Andromeda, you will get more out of this comic than if you're just coming into it blind. I think a lot of the stuff that's here, you're supposed to be like, oh, this is what was going on kind of stuff. Of course, the other reason why this comic is interesting, sort of on a metatextual thing, is because, I don't know if you guys heard, but BioWare basically said, we don't want to do Mass Effect anymore, at least for a while. Basically, Andromeda was so poorly received that they're freezing the IP. They're going to continue doing work on Andromeda, you know, because there's going to be downloadable content and things like that are going to be coming down. They're just supposedly they're going to focus on other IPs for a while. I think they're going to let it cool down. Maybe we'll start hearing stuff again from Mass Effect in, 5, 10, 15 years or something. So it's interesting. I'm guessing this comic was already in the works, but it'll be interesting to see where this comic lives as basically Mass Effect stuff ramps down.
Very cool. Interesting. That may be the place to go, people. Dark Horse Comics with their Mass Effect comic books. Mm. Oh, hey, Matthew.
Hey!
Look at that. That Secret of Empire thing is going on over at Marvel, and I'm guessing there are tons and tons of tie-ins.
There are. I like to think of today's review as a little taste of what could happen if we ever get to the point where we have enough Patreon backers to do a little thing that Stephen likes to call "Why Do You Hate Me?" Where Matthew reviews things that Listen, he really, really doesn't want to.
We are less than $100 away from that right now.
Son of a monkey.
We are $98 away as of this broadcast.
This is an official preview, then, of Why Do You Hate Me? As I take a look at Marvel Comics' Secret Warriors, number one. Now, the Secret Warriors is actually, as recent books go, as things that have happened in the past 12 years in the Marvel Universe go, kind of a high-profile book, because Secret Warriors is where Jonathan Hickman really made his first splash. And you may remember Jonathan Hickman as the man who turned the Avengers into something really woo-hoo-hoo and amazing. But this is Secret Warriors volume, 17, 2, 4, something. This is a new volume of Secret Warriors taking place in the shadow of the Secret Empire. For those who do not know, the Secret Empire is an ongoing crossover by which a cosmic cube rewrote history and turned Captain America from Sentinel of Liberty into Hydra sleeper agent. He has now taken over the world and is using the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra together as his personal army. And people are unhappy about it for reasons which are varied and wide, but not the least of which, of course, is just the optics of the whole thing. So when I came into Secret Warriors number one, I said, what's this going to do? Am I going to be mad at this? And the premise is that with the Inhumans, you guys remember the Inhumans. The Inhumans are Marvel trying to make Fetch happen for the last 10 years. The Inhumans are now being targeted specifically by Captain America or Captain Hydra-erica and his agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Hydra. And it's a few Inhumans, the highest profile Inhumans, teaming up to become some sort of resistance force. And of course, those Inhumans start with Daisy Johnson, Quake, who is super high profile because she has a TV show on TV, which nothing like this, by the way. Ms. Marvel, who I love. I think Ms. Marvel is a wonderful character. Moon Girl, who I also love, who's kind of an interesting character. And I really love the fact that they stuck her in the Marvel Universe and said, wow, she's totally the smartest one in the Marvel Universe, you guys. And then people started grousing and they said, nope. And she's got a dinosaur. And a couple of other schmucks, one of which is Inferno, or as I like to call him, the Inhuman who makes the whole process not make sense. But this is not about me. This is about the Inhumans. This issue takes place both before, during, and after Captain America takes over the world or takes over the country. As such, it's very confusing, and it jumps back and forth in time in a way that, on the one hand, I think it's really creative because it starts with a just huge block letters that tell us when and where these things happen. But rather than giving you an idea or something like 6 months ago or meanwhile, they say before the takeover, after the takeover, during the takeover. But it's confusing the way it's written. We start with before the takeover, then we have now, then we have after, then before, then back and forth. And the story jumps around in a way that I'm sure you, and I've said this over and over and over, you have to be reading the main book for this to make a whole lot of sense. When they assemble our team, they discover that there's a secret prison where they're sending all the Inhumans to be illegally incarcerated for the rest of their lives. And I'm going to be honest, it's hard for me to review this book on its own merits just because of the distaste that I have for the overarching narrative and the premise of the main crossover. This is not bad. This is not, you know, something where I'm like, oh, this is a terrible mistake. This is a horrible failure. At the end of the issue, they break an important Inhuman royal family member. It's Karnak, you guys, don't tell anybody. Out of prison, and they're prepared to go off and be La Resistance. But there's just something about it that leaves me cold. The way the issue is constructed in terms of the back and forth and the plot is confusing. The art has moments where it's really solid, really well done, and then moments where it feels very Walt Disney 1941 squash and stretch. There's a point where Moon Girl comes up and kicks a guy in the kneecaps, And I think it's supposed to be heroic and funny at the same time, but I'm just like, my God, that girl just broke her spine. So all in all, it's kind of wobbly. I think there's stuff here, especially if you're a huge fan of any of these characters. I think if you're totally into Secret Empire, you may want to pick up Secret Warriors number one. I didn't necessarily feel like my $14.99, I think it's actually a $3.99 book. So my $3.99 was fully registered here, and I'm going to go with two slices of meatloaf. I was more disappointed than I was entertained for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can see that. All right, Matthew, thank you for sharing that. Out this week from Dynamite Entertainment is the third issue of Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, The Big Lie, number three. This month they need the help of Tom. Gosh, now I forgot his name.
Tom Swift.
Yes, Tom Swift. He doesn't appear in the comic. He gets name checked in the comic as their computer go to guy that helps them out, because in order to dive deeper into this mystery, Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys need to get in good with a criminal element so they can start investigating and being introduced around to the criminal element. Well, before they can do that, the criminal element want them to break into the evidence locker room at the police headquarters and steal some hard drives. And so this issue is a giant heist issue. It comes out really well because the growing tension between the brothers gets resolved here, and they start working together as a team. And I think now that all three of them are working together, the next couple of issues are going to be really, really good. And I can't stop thinking about how good this show is, or how good this series is. And I kind of want it to be a TV show. And I know that people may have some mixed feelings about what they're doing with Riverdale and the Archie Comics, Archie Gang on the CW. But Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys is already that way in comic book form, and I think it would make a very interesting transition into live action. The art, again, continues to be really good. The mystery and the story and how they're setting things up continues to be solid, although by issue three, I was hoping they'd be a little bit further along in the story, so I don't know if this is a... I'm going to have to go back and look and see if this is a six-issue run or what, because at this point in their journey, they seem to be about a third of the way through, or a fourth of the way through the story that they want to tell, which would make this a 12-issue run, which I'm fine with. But guys, this is a great book. You need to go out and check it. It's Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, The Big Lie, number three. Go pick up the first two or you're going to be completely lost. It's from Dynamite Entertainment. It is out this week, and I'm giving it a solid four slices of meatloaf. And this kind of meatloaf, the four slice kind of meatloaf, is the kind you want to cover with just a little bit of gravy, because it just adds that extra touch. And that's what this book is doing. It's adding that little extra touch to the whole lineup. So it's really good. It brings a smile to my face when I talk about it. And every time I sit down to read it, I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to see what's happening next with Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys. Listeners, if you want to check out more reviews, head over to majorspoilers.com. That is where you will find them all. Thank you, Rodrigo, for sharing your thoughts. Matthew and Ashley, also the same. And no poll of the week this week because, man, I am still trying to play catch up from things that have happened in previous weeks. So I'm a little behind.
Try playing mustard instead.
Yeah, I was out of town this weekend. Many of you know the boy. You hear him at the very end of all of the shows that we produce. He does the copyright information. He was in a soccer tournament, and they walked away with the championship this week. And because of that, because they played a late game on Sunday, we didn't get home until really, really late. So I'm still playing catch up, getting videos and other things posted on our YouTube channel, Major Spoilers Video. Go check that out, as well as getting a lot of our other podcasts put together. But I did spend some time this week in this long drive listening to some other podcasts. And I don't know if you guys have heard this other podcast called Lore. I think that's the name of it. Have we talked about that before, Ashley?
No, I have incredibly mixed feelings about Lore. So.
Well, I want to make sure that I got the right one, because now I'm thinking, no, it's not Lore, because that's the single host guy. And the one that I listen to is a double host team.
Yeah. Lore is just like Data, only he has a functional emotion ship.
The host of Lore has about that much personality.
It is a slower podcast, but it is interesting. But they haven't he hasn't produced any new ones of that in a while because he's busy converting the show into a live action series, I think, on FX or Fox.
Yeah, I stopped listening to it because I thought I'm sorry, dude, what hosts Lore? I don't think you have a ton of personality. I think you're probably a great writer. When he started complaining about how hard it was to create a podcast and a TV show at the same time, I was like, I can't. I would love to have that problem, and I'm sure I would feel the same way, but like, I'm done with Lore right now.
Well,
you never beat the vampire episode.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, it's not Lore. That's not the one that I was listening to. But I can't see it in my list here. Oh, Astonishing Legends. That's what it is. Astonishing Legends, which is kind of the same thing.
It's just like Data and it's not Lore. It could be B4.
It could be, or it could be what's their daughter's name?
Lol.
Oh. Lol. That's right.
Oh, that's like the worst episode. Riker hits on her, and Data is like, what are your intentions with my daughter when they're in 10 forward?
He is fighting that female.
Terrible.
Why?
I love that episode.
You know, there are a lot of really bad episodes of Star Trek. The Next Generation, but I don't know if I would put that in the worst category.
That is no Shades of Gray.
If we're throwing podcast recommendations around, Star Trek: The Next Conversation is a great one if you want to wade through the garbage that is the first two seasons of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
I will admit that the first season, if you go back and watch that first season, it's not great, especially it's the rough one where they go to the naked planet. And Will trips over a plant or something they have to execute.
Justice.
Oh, yeah. It would have been better if they had, though.
Wesley was nearly killed by the Edo on planet Omicron 12 in season one episode. Sorry, I nerded myself.
Alti all shade, though. I really want that women's Wesley Crusher sweater that they make now. It looks really cool. It's got the rainbow stripes and everything.
Off, too.
Oh, thank you. It'll be Wesley for Halloween.
Shut up,
no
Wesley.
One will like me anymore.
No, you can't be Wesley because your haircut actually looks attractive.
So anyway, I was listening to Astonishing Legends, and they had a piece on Knights of the Golden Circle, which was a Southern revivalist movement that happened before and after the Civil War, you know, to bring the South will rise again, this kind of thing. Really fascinating. But one of the things that they bring up is that this secret organization was hiding gold all over the country. And caches of gold that can still be found today if you know where to look and if you know the signs and all these other things. I found it incredibly fascinating, and it started me thinking, are there still lost treasures out there? I'm not talking about sunken ship kind of stuff, but I'm like someone buried.
Spoilers, treasure hunt?
Yeah, I think so. Like a buried cache of gold out there somewhere that some, you know, maybe it's a pirate, maybe it's someone else has buried and it is just waiting to be found. Is there that kind of stuff out there?
S-Town taught me that there's not.
Didn't
it's under the teapot,
just...
Ashley. The upside down
it's in
teapot.
The freezer, apparently.
Somebody just discovered a shipwreck that they didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like full. And this is a shipwreck that people have heard about. They're like, oh, yeah, we heard the legend of
Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Ernest P. Worrell sunk with all souls aboard and a ton of gold, and we never knew where it was. And here it is now. And of course, it's turned into this huge salvage rights thing with three companies and two countries all fighting over whose
See,
it
that's
is.
See, that's the weird thing about the sunken ship one, because right now it's become so corporatized, I want to say, in that these people are all forming companies specifically to go and dig up this treasure so that the company owns it and it's not a personal issue where it gets down to who gets what share and those kinds of things. They've made it all very legal. Yeah, they've made it all very legal. But in this instance, and this is this weird story, and if someone wants to go and do this, you're totally go for it. But if you do find a treasure, I would hope that you would remember that I pointed you in this direction, and 25% seems really fair. I would go and look for this myself, but I'm totally scared of snakes. But...
of snacks.
I'm also scared of snacks.
None
right?
of us are scared of snacks.
Yeah. Well, I've got another story to tell you. But so in this story of the Golden Circle, it was basically I think it was 1,200 miles or 2,400 miles circumference or radius around Havana. This is where this new government and citizenship would be. So it would include basically all of Mexico, a lot of South America, I don't know if it stretched all the way over to Africa, but it included parts of Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, et cetera, in this circle. And I don't know if they specifically were putting this gold inside the circle radius or not. But growing up as a kid, there was near a river near where I grew up, everyone would talk about Jesse James Cave. And interesting thing is, like, I would hear these stories from everybody passed down from people that have lived there forever about how Jesse James and his gang would come up here and hide out. And they had this cave that they would go and put their stuff in. But as I do research, I cannot find anything that says Jesse James was ever up in this region. That's the first part about this story that makes me go, this story's a hoax. But then in this Astonishing Legends show, they talk about how there are multiple people who went by the name of Jesse James, and they postulate in the episode that Jesse James may have been the person in charge of going out and, or the person going by Jesse James, going out and burying these treasures all over the place. And the way you find these treasures is they've got symbols and things that are pointing you stuff that would stick around for a long time. Not something like someone painted on the side of a wall kind of thing. But I've always started to wonder, could this Jesse James cave that everyone was talking about when I grew up down by the river, if that could be one of these places, if that could be one of these places where this lost gold could be at. Now, when I was in middle school, my best friend's sister was older and they were in high school and the river had dropped. The river had dropped a little bit and they had all gone out one day to go out and explore and go into this cave, because apparently it's fairly easy to get into if the river is low enough. And they came back and they were just, you know, it was just like, hey, it's a place to go out and drink and make out and do all these other things. But when they came back, I was like, oh, so what's it like? And she was like, oh, there's all these weird things carved into the walls and everything. And it's real muddy and stuff. And she just kind of blew it off as maybe it was more hassle than it was worth. But now I'm thinking that Jesse James cave may contain a treasure trove, a treasure cache. You don't think?
Well, that's
why I ask. That's why I ask, is if these kinds of things still exist today, if people are out there actively looking for them, or if it's something like the average Joe could just stumble upon an old mason jar filled with gold nuggets.
Well, just last month near Ark City, they discovered what apparently is a lost city, like 400-year-old Spanish settlement in the middle of freaking Kansas.
Yeah.
You know, near Wichita, but it's this enormous settlement that people are like, yeah, we've heard about it. People talked about it, but we never really knew where it was. They found this in April of freaking 2017.
Mm-hmm.
They found this just evidence of this massive city. They're saying that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have a lot of the structures anymore, but they're able to go and find evidence that this town exists.
So, now, was this Spanish or was this different?
I want to say it was Spanish because
Coronado did. Coronado did come all the way up to at least the Arkansas River or the Arkansas River.
The name of the settlement was Etzanoa. So I'm almost certain that it's Spanish, or at least named by people of Spanish origin.
Interesting. Interesting. Rodrigo, lost gold, yes or no?
Oh, almost certainly. People and organizations are always stashing things and then, you know, ships get sunk, trains get blown up, organizations get dissolved, and then nobody finds that stuff. I bet you there's a lot of, like, in a much more boring way, I bet you there's a lot of money that's like free floating out there, that it's money that belongs to no one because some company or another stashed it somewhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Maybe literally in a bank. It's just the money's there. It exists, but nobody can claim it because the company fell apart or the ownership is up in the air.
And so it defaults to the bank.
So there's a lot of stuff. Like, that's the more modern version and the more modern and boring version of it. But yeah, I mean, there are clerical errors all the time. Things get lost all the time. There have been dozens of wars. And if you're just looking at the continental United States, think of all of the like just wars that have been fought between the US and Mexico, the French, the British, everybody else, Native American nations, and all of the like caches.
Yeah, that'd be right.
And you know, everything else that was hidden, that was fortified, and then eventually just get blown over by dust or tumbleweeds or whatever.
I find that fascinating that, you know, there are still ghost towns that are still intact that you can go and find, and they still have like, you know, furniture sitting there that's been sitting there for 20 years that just people got up and walked away from it.
So in order to come across these things, like in order to find hidden things, you have to A, kind of know where to look, B, have the funding, and C, have like kind of a crew, you know. And people are always like, you know, you see things where it's like scientists have discovered a new beetle. And it's like, well, why are they discovering it now? It's like, well, maybe they had discovered, maybe this beetle's been around, maybe people had seen it, but it took somebody to have the funding to sit down and get paid to look at this beetle really closely and be like, oh, this is a different beetle than all the other beetles, right?
Speaking
and it's the
of,
same thing with all this stuff, is somebody actually being like, okay, here's a bucket of money, go find this thing.
Right.
Well, that's what, I mean, that's the kind of the disappointing part. That's kind of the disappointing part, right? Where it's like, hey, I have to get $1 million of funding to go find this treasure that might be worth $3 million.
Or to make a documentary out of it. Like, or stream it on Twitch. Like, to make it in any way worthwhile, you have to have funding to begin with.
Yeah, that's the sad part of it.
You do have to be motivated by, you know, slamming your fist on a table and shouting it belongs in a museum. Otherwise, there's no monetary value to it, because chances are, you are only going to find, at best, historical artifacts that are not going to be worth very much, and you are going to spend a whole lot of money.
Yeah. So
at the worst, Sala is going to betray you, and you'll be chased out into the street by a boulder.
Yeah, I mean, you can travel light and just bring your girlfriend and your short round, but...
Yeah.
Well,
even then, you got to have that bag of sand.
I will let Matthew be my short round, and I will let you guys swim in the snake-infested waters looking for Jesse James' cave.
Okay, first and foremost, I'm taller than you.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
So this also brings up the thing that I've talked about many, many, many times on this show, the quest for the Smallville station. And I've gone so far after the most recent Zach on Film, where we did the Paper Moon, and I went out and did some, you know, film archaeology, where I was like, let me go and find these places where this was actually shot and see where
That's
it's like
a cute
today.
Movie.
It is. It really is. It's a fun movie, and people should go check it out. But I started doing a little bit more research, and I finally went on to Google Earth, because, you know, they have those high-res satellite images.
Right.
And I scoured basically the entire county where supposedly this Smallville station is, looking at the railroad track lines and looking to see if there were any signs of the remnant, tracks or something that could be a station type debris or something just off to the side. Cause you think that would show up in satellites. I mean, not too long ago, this kid found a lost city in the jungle just because he was looking at Google Earth, and he like pointed it out to people, and they were like, nah, can't be. And then they looked again, and it's like, oh yeah, there's a city right here that people have not seen. So I've scoured that entire track line looking for something that could point to an old building or something, but to date, nothing has appeared.
Foiled
again. Thank you, technology, for ruining the joy of finding the real Smallville.
I have that same sort of problem in that I got a Flash t-shirt for Christmas.
Yeah.
And it went down the laundry chute.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't seen it since.
Wash.
I vibrate into another dimension.
Well, but then again, once you put it in that laundry chute, the skies cleared up and were no longer red. So maybe the shirt made the ultimate sacrifice. See, Ashley,
maybe it's a time remnant.
Yeah, there you go.
What? Time remnants are dumb.
They're super dumb.
What you should be worried about is that sometimes, like out of the corner of your eye, do you see a black t-shirt, because then you should be worried.
No, but I turned it inside out and it tried to kill my mom.
Can I go back in time and save my dead parent? I would sacrifice everybody else's happiness for that. That's legit.
Oh, that
that's
is so
the one thing I agree with Barry Allen on.
Yep.
So a question here. One of you wrote down, should Marvel try and get Blade back? Blade, the Vampire Slayer character back. And here's the interesting thing. I went and did the research. The rights have already reverted back to Disney.
Oh.
So I wonder if the question is it time for Marvel / Disney to do another Blade movie? I mean, Blade is what kicked off the entire Marvel cinematic universe.
They already got Idris Elba on payroll. Give him a role that's not the butler to Asgard, and this is a great opportunity.
I think it might be. What do you think, Rodrigo?
My thought is, and I'm the one who suggested this topic. My thought was, I was looking at the Defenders trailer, and I was like, "What is this team missing?" And it finally hit me that it's missing Blade. Like, Blade fits really well in that power level that they're playing with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we've already had Blade TV shows,
right? Which weren't horrible.
No, they were okay. Like, that first Blade movie is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, just great in, like, the 90s-est sort of way.
Yeah.
And the series just kind of never made the splash that I hoped that it would.
Yeah, it suffered, I think, too much from Buffy-itis.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on. I mean, you could argue that the rest of the Blade movies suffered too much from Buffy-itis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those, like, vampires that ate other vampires, like that's such a Whedon thing. In any case, I think that right now Netflix has precisely the sort of like setup that Blade would fit in really well into, especially since the superheroes right now are so gritty, right? It's like they're all like sad and their parents are mad at them or something. I don't know. I forget. But
you'd like him in that Defenders universe though, not in, you know, maybe like a supernatural corner of his own.
I would. I think it because they're already doing that stuff with the hand, right? You already have these kind of like yucky immortal ninjas. Like, why not also have vampires running around New York City? It's a good opportunity because they're going for this like dark, gritty stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you could have Blade, you could have Werewolf by Night.
Moon Knight.
Walk into this stuff. Yeah, Moon Knight. Yeah. Walk into this stuff.
Don't do Moon Knight.
And still not like in the same way that these are very, for the most part, kind of very like reserved superhero antics. You can also have that sort of like low level. This is mostly a guy with a sword who every once in a while like jumps really high. and still, you know, it's kind of the same thing. You're still existing in the same universe. And hey, what an amazing thing it would be to have two black men in one show, right?
Yes.
It's asking a lot. And it's all Supergirl can do to keep it together with their Jimmy storylines.
Yeah.
This is the thing, though. I mean, the Defenders have always had, and by always, I mean in the comics, a supernatural element to them. This is a group that had the Gargoyle, the Son of Satan. The founding members of the Defenders include Doctor Strange, who's obviously out of the play, but Doctor Strange's magic weird crap is the center of those early Defender stories. And I feel like, first of all, I don't like to say most people because that's kind of douchey. What you may not realize is that Blade is one of Marvel's most tenured heroes. He's from 1973, literally like 9 months after Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm.
He's only like the third African-American hero in Marvel history. Can't even count the Black Panther because he's actually from Africa. But when you look at it, I think that this makes perfect sense. Because it gives you a balance for all the weird Kunlun stuff.
Right.
It gives you someone who can play off of Jessica's darky darkness, you know, the thing that she does where she's all like, I'm super depressed and a guy controlled my brain and now I can punch you to death. I like that. I think that's great. And I think that Blade, at least the way he was played, I remember him in the films, kind of had a snarky edge where he would actually play well off those other characters.
Well, and even no matter what, it's a good opportunity to kind of rework that character too. It's like you could play it very closely to the Snipes blade or the Fingas blade.
We prefer to refer to him as Kirk.
Oh, well, there you go. But yeah, it's a good opportunity to just maybe rework the character from the ground up to something that'll be closer to that, but definitely not Iron Fist.
Go back to his look with the goggles and the massive afro and like the army surplus jacket. I'll be in. I'm on board. I love
it. So where do you want to see this? You want to see this on Netflix, a new movie? Is this a FX show? Where does this best sit, Ashley?
I personally, with my zero knowledge of Blade, would probably lean toward another movie because Marvel's not got a great track record at 15 movies starring white guys, you know, for like interesting things. So that's where I would want to put him. But I don't know anything about Blade except that he's a black vampire hunter.
Right. Well, his real name's Eric. So you got that going for you.
We've reviewed a Blade trade like a year or so ago, I want to say. Yeah, it's a couple of years ago we reviewed Blade.
It always seems like we've done stuff within the past year, but as it turns out, some of the stuff like we've reviewed was like 15 maybe. Years ago.
Do you remember what happened in that story?
Yes, he was going into a house and there were monsters and he was fighting them.
Oh, crap. That's about right. That may actually be the old school Blade.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was.
Yeah, it was. That, yeah, it was like early '80s Blade, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, here's what I've done. I've put up for the September 20th show. It's Blade something or other for Ashley.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find something with the old Tomb of Dracula crap.
Yeah, it may have been some of that stuff. I can't remember.
Here's your Blade primer for the next episode of Geek History Lesson. His name is Eric. While his mother was pregnant, she was bitten by a vampire. So he was born sort of a kind of half vampire.
Daywalker.
Yep.
Right. And he was originally drawn by Gene Colan, who is a genius. And I use that term not as loosely as I normally do. And he kind of looked like Jim Brown in a big gray coat with wooden knives that I think are awesome. And he had this massive afro and he was really cool. And he tried to kill Dracula in his first appearance.
Yeah.
So it's not like he didn't start out early.
We have just reviewed too much on the Major Spoilers podcast. Almost 730 episodes next week. How about that?
Wow. That's a lot of episodes.
That is a lot of episodes. We just passed 400 episodes of the Critical Hit podcast this past weekend. That's over 600 hours of content. And over 700 here on the Major Spoilers podcast. We just released episode 225 of Munchkin Land. Nice. Let's see.
Doing
where are
reviews
we at?
On episode 29.
I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look, but we've got to be close to 100 because I stopped numbering them. I was just like, it really doesn't matter for numbering because people can jump in and listen. No, because people can jump in and listen to those at any time because they're not really connected to one another in any way. So I stopped numbering those. I stopped numbering Zach on Film. So those have both got to be over 100. And I know Wayne's Comics is into the 400s. What else do we have? We've got Finally
top
Friday.
Five.
Yeah, Top 5 is definitely over 100. I think that's probably in 200.
1,000 of Top 5.
Well, if we combine them all together, like I've said, we have had over 1,000 podcasts, which, you know, Action Comics, where are they at? 997 or something?
973.
I told you we'd get to 1,000 podcasts before they would.
Well, they rebooted.
Well, so if we many times. Oh, and to keep us from having to reboot again, listeners, patreon.com/major spoilers. That's where you want to go. And I think that wraps it up for this installment of the Major Spoilers podcast. That's all we have time for this week. But we will be back next week to talk more comic goodness. In fact, next week, what do we have on the agenda? Oh, it's a fifth week event, everyone.
Ooh. Amalgam?
Assassins and Bullets and Bracelets. That's next time on the Major Spoilers podcast. Why? Because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
That- have the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, it's like a man of iron. I might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the middle east with a gang sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2011.